Hi, everyone. I'm Dennis Prager. This is my home, the Prager home. That's my fireside. This is my chat, and this is the fireside chat. For those of you who are wondering where the cigar is, I lament that I cannot smoke it because, Facebook would not allow us to promote my fireside chats if I smoked a cigar. Which is sort of a credit to me because they don't think I'm old enough to be allowed to smoke a cigar. They thought I was underage, and I don't know what to do. No, it's so sad. I went through this each time, but a lot of people ask me, "How come you don't have the cigar?" And I feel so bereft. It's so much part of what the fireside chat was for so long. It's such a backwards, it's so upside down. I've talked about this a lot. Give me my minute to emote. It's so upside down, so many of the preoccupations. You know, we legalize marijuana. Legalize it. Which, by the way, has increased traffic deaths measurably. Just among its many consequences. You know, people tune out under marijuana. You don't tune out under a cigar. But so that's what the war has, this war against tobacco and lumping cigarettes with cigars, when cigars are so much less dangerous to your health. You don't inhale. It doesn't have those carcinogens. It's just tobacco. Oh, well, anyway, what am I going to do? I got to reach people with the fireside chat. But I miss it. Okay. Got that off my chest. Hi, everybody. So, I was talking to some of the terrific folks from Prager University, and I said, what should I open with? Because sometimes I open with something in the news, and sometimes something that is just larger than the news. I love both. So, I was told that there are people who, when objecting to people coming to their campus with whom they differ, argue that their words, that is the words of those they differ with, which means conservatives, they differ with conservatives, are violence. That there's no difference between words and violence. And it's hard for me to believe that someone could say something so truly stupid. But then I realized that the odds are that it came from college, that the people saying this are either professors or graduate students or even undergraduate students. You have to learn something that stupid. And I mean it. You have to learn it. Because if you asked any five-year-old, is there a difference between punching somebody in the face and saying something not nice, they would think you were cuckoo, because they would know it's a lot different. There's like no comparison. So there are two spectacularly dumb and immoral ideas in the notion that conservatives coming to campus is equivalent to violence. Because their speech. Number one, it's a lie about conservatives. I must have 100 lectures up on YouTube. Maybe 500. I have no idea how many. You show me where I advocate or even in any way suggest that people should be violent. You won't find it. It's an absurdity. So it's a calumny. It's a lie about conservatives, which is done all the time. I'm preparing to speak at Colorado State University, and they just lie about things that I believe. They have no basis. They have no quotation marks around it. They make it up. So that's one aspect of why this is wrong morally. Conservatives coming to campus, that's equivalent to violence. Second, let us say that anybody, right, left, middle, came to campus and spoke awful things. How could that be equivalent to violence? Speech may advocate violence, and that's approaching the evil of violence. But violence is violence. Excuse me. And speech is speech. The moment I heard this nonsense that speech is violence, I thought, wow, I wish we could ask the 6 million Jews that the Nazis butchered whether they would have preferred to be insulted or gassed. What do you think if we could resurrect them, they would say? Now, do you understand how stupid and immoral the idea that speech and violence are equivalent? I was read, some female professor said, well, you have to understand how injurious to people's feelings. Sometimes injury to people's feelings can be equivalent to injury to their body. What are you talking about? By the way, if she actually believed that, then she would stop all the attacks, the verbal attacks on conservatives coming to campus. You know, I am attacked so often that you could spend days on the internet just reading attacks on me. Do you think I think in any way that they are equivalent to somebody coming and breaking my arm? Or God forbid, worse? How could somebody come up with such an idea that speech is violence? That's like saying yes is no. It's like saying snow is sand. It's just, there's no truth to it. It's an absurdity. How could you possibly take such an idea seriously? It's painful. This is the stuff, if you're a college student, this is the drivel that you are taught. Speech is violence. Speech can lead to violence, but it isn't violence. I shake my head every day because on my radio show, which I do every day, every Monday to Friday, 3 hours, and I bring these examples of how the left is, and I'll use this word, raping language. This is a rape of language. They mock the idea, the very same people who say speech is violence, mock the idea that it is in any way possible to compare false accusations of rape versus actual rape. And I do, I believe, I think that the rape of a person's name can be compared to the rape of a body. Can be, not on all occasions. Sometimes the rape of the body is much worse, but sometimes the rape of a name is worse. What do we have other than our name? That's all we have on this planet. What the regard with which people have in thinking of us. So they say these horrible things. It's ironic. They use violent language, but I still will say it's not comparable to violence. People on the left routinely call any of us conservatives six herb. Sexist, intolerant, xenophobic, homophobic, Islamophobic, racist, and bigoted. But I don't consider that violence. I consider it lies. I consider it defaming. But it's not the same as violence. If you have ever heard that speech is violence, you must understand how equally dumb and immoral that comment is. And that is the reason that I've opened up today's fireside chat with a brief discussion of that idea. One more thing that you should know. If you are hurt by something you hear, I'm about to tell you something, especially if you're on the young side of life, but even a lot of older people don't know this. You determine how much you're hurt. See, if I break your arm, you don't determine how much damage was done to your arm. That's objective. There's an objective reality. The bone was broken in the following three places. That's an objective fact. But if your heart is broken or your ego is hurt, and I don't use that term ego as a negative. Just if your self-image is hurt or whatever, that's not objective. That's subjective. I'm not denying that it happens. I'm saying you determine how much damage it will do to you, words. You just don't let them damage you. You have to determine. You have to be mind-driven in life. That's one of the mind versus the brain and the mind versus the heart are two of the biggest subjects of my life. You have to be mind-driven to have a good life, to have a happy life. You can't be feelings-driven. Feelings are terrific. Feelings are what divide us from computers. But you can't be feelings-driven. You must drive your feelings. You cannot let them drive you. So even if things are said on a campus and you find them insulting, okay, you shouldn't have to retreat to a safe room and play with stuffed animals. That's not a good sign if at the age of 20 you can't handle ideas that you don't agree with. It's a bad sign. It means you're not strong. It means you won't get through life. Life is not easy. Problem is, life in America is so easy compared to the rest of human history and the rest of the world, people get spoiled. So they don't realize what an achievement it has been to make life as easy as it is for Americans. But that's another subject. You determine how hurt you will be. That's not it's not an objective fact. It's a subjective fact that you're hurt. I decided very early in my life, because I was doing public work at the age of 21 and haven't stopped, I decided, and this is a very good piece of advice, I decided that, or I made a sort of a rule for myself. Dennis, if you let compliments go to your head, you're going to let insults go to your heart. And so I decided compliments won't go to my head and insults won't go to my heart. And that's exactly the way it worked. You can't have one without the other. If you let compliments go to your head and puff you up and you start thinking you're terrific and so on, then you're going to be really hurt by the insults. But if you thank people for the compliments and sincerely thank them, it's a lovely thing that a person has said something nice about you to you, but you don't let it go to your head, then the insults won't go to your heart. Okay, guys, it is time for your questions. Okay, here we go. Ashley, 23, Los Angeles, California. What are your thoughts on someone claiming the pro-abortion platform is supported by libertarian philosophy? Well, libertarianism and pro-abortion have nothing to do with one another. You could be, if you're a strict libertarian, you might say, let anybody who wants to have an abortion have one. Any woman who wants an abortion can have one. That might be a strict libertarian position. But you would have to argue that there is no moral component to libertarianism. And I don't know if that's true. Libertarianism is, liberty is the central belief. I share it. You want the government to be as out of people's lives as possible. I share that too. These are great American values. But no libertarian would say, for example, that, you know, I'm a libertarian and I'm pro-choice on bank robbery. Of course not. No libertarian would say that, because they draw a moral line. No. You can do whatever you want, but you can't rob a bank. You can't kidnap a child. You can't murder. I mean, there are a whole list of things libertarians would say are wrong. Libertarians have a moral component to libertarianism, the strictest libertarian. So they might say, look, the government should stay out of legislating this because people differ on what abortion constitutes, whether it's murder, whether it's homicide, or whether it's removing a pimple. Okay? That's which is what it is for a fair number of people. It's removing a pimple. But they would have to acknowledge it depends on your attitude toward abortion, what your attitude might be with regard to its legality. I have a video at Prager University on the morality, not the legality. And I make that clear in the opening of the video. I'm not talking about legality. That's pro-choice, not pro-choice. I'm just talking about the morality. A libertarian has to think, just like non-libertarians have to think. So a libertarian is obligated to think through what is the morality of abortion in, let us say, the 6th month. How about the 9th month? And likewise, well, what about the 1st week? Okay, fine. I respect a thought-through position, but you have to think it through. You can't use the excuse, I'm a libertarian, therefore I don't have to think morally. Sorry, that's a cop-out. Libertarians are also obligated to take moral positions. They could be confused, fine. They could be ambivalent, fine. But they have to take some position. So, and the ultimate question with regard to the human fetus, I won't even say baby, the human fetus is, does it have any right to live? Do we have any obligation to protect it? Or is it essentially an ingrown toenail? Nobody, correct, has ever advocated preventing a woman from cutting out an ingrown toenail, right? Or 1,000 other things with their own body. So the argument a woman can do what she wants with her own body is a non sequitur. It has nothing to do with the issue of abortion because it's not her body, it's in her body. I mean, that's just intellectually dishonest, the statement she could do whatever she wants with her body. We agree a woman can do whatever she wants with her body. Okay? Conservatives do not have a position on the legality of tattoos. You want to have a tattoo? Have a tattoo. So you would have to argue then that extinguishing the life of what it is you're carrying, that if you carry the term will be fully human, extinguishing that life is as morally a non-issue as getting a tattoo. That's what you would have to argue. But you have to argue something. Once again, being a libertarian does not absolve you from moral thought. Okie dokie. Next. Lee, L-E-I-G-H, 24, Kansas City, Missouri. Do you have any advice for a college senior who is still not sure what she wants to do with her life? Well, this I could talk to you about all day. I think in previous generations, not mine, the baby boomers were as confused as the millennials, but the parents of the baby boomers, I'm a baby boomer, the parents of the baby boomer generation and parents before them and before them and before them and before them, they didn't have this question. The vast majority of people throughout the vast majority of cultures knew what they wanted to do with their own life at a very early age. And what was it? They wanted to get married and to make a family and to have a community. That's what they wanted to do. This has been killed since the 60s. The left has said that is patriarchy. That is telling a woman that she should be barefoot and pregnant. That is telling a woman to go back to the kitchen, which is, by the way, whenever I hear this, like, you know, it's like equated with the concentration camp. Oh, they're sending women back to the kitchen. Anyway, nobody is, but I'm just saying, even the rhetoric is a little overblown. Kitchen is not a hellhole. Okay? A lot of places of work are a lot worse than the kitchen. Just to re-enter reality. Not every job is a blast. Okay? Just thought you ought to know that. So, they knew what they wanted to do with their lives. Men, too. Men wanted to get married, make a family, have children, and they wanted meaningful, or at least work that, not forget meaningful, they wanted work that paid the bills to support that family. That's right. So it's painful to me that you, probably a wonderful young woman, graduating college, what am I going to do with my life? It's because nobody told you that there is actually something wonderful you can do with your life. Make a family. I'm not saying it's the only thing you should do with your life. Nobody ever says it's the only thing you should do. No one. The most conservative human I know does not think the only thing a man or a woman should do with their life is make a family. Okay? And by the way, let's say you can have children, and for whatever reason you're not adopting. So what? Therefore, you can't have any meaning in your life? We're not stupid. But you have been deprived of the most powerful meaning giver. You young females, and females in my generation, not just yours. You should hear all the women who are 45 years old calling my radio show, and they are CEOs, and they are making six-figure incomes. And they are very lonely. I just read for my listeners from the Washington Post. They have a feminist column every week. And this woman wrote, I am a middle-class, white, heterosexual female. I don't remember what she said. I think she's 40 years old. And I have never been so lonely in my life. But of course, excuse me. She said, I'm a middle-class, middle-aged, heterosexual feminist. That's what she wrote, feminist. So I noted on the air, did it ever occur to her that maybe her feminism and her loneliness were related? Just throwing it out as a possibility. I don't even want to say it happened. I don't even think about it. Is it possible that her belief, you know, I won't acknowledge that it's important to have a man in my life. I'm a woman. Who needs a man? Or as the fools of my generation said, a woman without a man is like a fish without a bicycle. And we all know fish don't need bicycles, therefore women don't need men. But women do need men. And by the way, men need women. And here's the amazing thing. Men are more readily open to admitting that they need a woman than women are to their needing a man. They think the feminist academics have taught them you're a loser. You're a loser if you think you need a man. Yep. Here's one. You're a loser if you don't think you need a man. That's much more close to the truth. Because you are bereft of common sense and the truth about the human condition where men and women need each other. So the first thing I think of it when a woman such as you, a senior in college, gee, what should I do with my life? What am I going to tell you? Get a PhD in botany? What are you going to do? You're going to go home and talk to tulips? I mean, think about it. I have nothing against a PhD in botany. It beats a PhD in sociology. At least you learn something. But this is so sad. These are years when a woman... Here's a truism that'll drive you crazy if you believe feminism. Because feminism doesn't have much regard for life's truths. Nothing on the left does. It's a make-believe world that they live in. You have a much better chance getting a good man at 25 than at 35. And better chance at 35 than at 45. You can get a good man at 76. I know it's possible. I'm telling you that what is more likely. There are women at 76 who get married. God bless them. More power to them. But at 26, you have a bigger choice. Good men don't grow on trees. I'm a man telling you this. By the way, good women don't grow on trees either. But just for the record, good men don't grow on trees. There's not an infinite number of good men. And you're more likely to meet one in your 20s than in your 30s, or 40s, or 50s, or 60s, and so on. So that's what I think you should do with your life. Everything else is gravy. You'll also have a wonderful work. I know a couple very well. The woman, both the man and the woman are wonderful human beings. They're in their 30s. She has two daughters, and she is completely committed to being a model of strength to her daughters, that she is a working woman and works full-time, brings in her share of the income, and now she's not so sure. Why is that a better model for my daughters than being there for them when they come home from school? You can't do everything. This is another nonsense of the left. Women can have it all. Nobody can have it all. It doesn't exist having it all. You choose what you have. So if you choose to be a full-time worker, you I'm talking to a female now, you'll have less time for your children, you'll have less time for your marriage, you'll have less time for your home. There's a reason for that. Are you ready? This is unbelievable. This is an insight that has sailed over the left's heads. There are only 24 hours in a day, even for feminists. Yeah, that's a tough one to swallow. No matter what you do, you're stuck with a 24-hour day. And assuming you'll sleep just 6 or 7 hours, that's down already to 17. And if you work 8, that's down to 9. But you do have to shower and eat and go to the bathroom and travel. So there ain't much time left. And then there's kids, the home, and may I add, a husband. So if you nurture your work more than anything else, you're nurturing your husband and your kids less. That's a fact, not an opinion. Now, you may say it doesn't matter. Okay, that's a judgment call you're free to make. So all of this is what I think about when somebody who's, a senior in college at 21, about 21, 22 years of age. So that's what I would have you think about. You determine what you want to do with your life. For almost all of history, getting married and making a family was determined. It was like a given. Love and marriage go together like a horse and carriage. You probably heard that as a very famous theme song from the 1950s, I believe it is, on a TV show in the last 10 or so years. Yeah, not anymore. Love and marriage don't go together. That's a shame. As you will realize when you're much older, if you're not married. Now, do a lot of marriages end up in divorce? Yeah, a lot of cars crash. It's not an argument against not driving, is it? That's not an argument against driving. Never understood that argument. Oh, my parents had a terrible divorce, or my parents got divorced. I'm afraid of getting married. If your parents had a terrible car crash, would you be afraid of driving? Okay. Thank you for your question, Lee. Oh, she's 24. I even said she's 24. She's not 21. So even more so. Harrison, 18. Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Hi, Dennis. Hi, Harrison. Do you use emojis when you text? I do, in fact. Not a lot, because, if you do it a lot, it loses some of its meaning. The emojis that I send, though, are not the normal ones. They're completely random. So for reasons that I don't know other than aesthetics, I periodically will send a text and put up the Albanian flag. By the way, if you look it up, it is one of the world's most beautiful flags. It's got this bird, I don't remember what bird it is, and it's a powerful bird in black on a fully red background. And I love the absurd. I do. I travel in the world of absurdity much of my life. It keeps me sane. I've often said the absurd keeps me sane. That's why I love the humor of the absurd. That's my favorite form of humor. It's like, that's why I love Monty Python movies. They're just truly absurd, and I find them very funny. So, yes, I will attach every so often an Albanian flag to a text, and I only wish I could have a picture of the recipient's face, thinking, what the hell is that? And then they will ask me, what was that? And that's the flag of Albania. And then they'll think, what am I missing? And the answer is nothing. They're missing nothing. Anyway, I could go on, and then you will think less of me. So I will leave it at that. Ronaldo, 29, Arizona City. Now, I bet you I can guess the state Arizona City is located in. Let me think. Is it Idaho, Massachusetts, or Arizona? I go with the latter, and I'm right. What do you think should be the U.S. policy on international relations? Should the U.S. police the world? Yes, I do. The U.S. should police the world, and I'll tell you why. Do you need police in your neighborhood? The answer is, of course, yes, right? So why would your neighborhood need police, but the world not? The world's neighborhoods are nicer? I don't think so. So here are your options. If the United States doesn't police the world, there are two options. There will be no policemen, or there will be bad policemen. That's it. Those are your choices. That's only if you want to live in reality. If you went to college, reality is not a factor in making such determinations, because they live in a make-believe world of imagine. It's all John Lennon's imagine. So here is a perfect example. What are your options? If the U.S. doesn't police the world, somebody else will or nobody will. If nobody does, there will be a massive increase in cruelty on Earth, in rape, in torture, in murder, in incarceration, in deprivation of liberty. That's what will happen if there was no policeman. Just as if there were no policeman in your neighborhood, there would be an increase in rape and murder and burglary, etc. Correct? Correct. Or somebody else will police. So who would you like to do that? The UN? I'm so sorry. Who would you like to do it? China? I don't think so. They have very different values, the Chinese Communist government, than we do. Who would you like to police the world? Russia? Or how about the EU? Please, the EU doesn't even believe in policing Europe, let alone the world. So yes, I would like the U.S. to police the world. What's the choice? Okay? How are we doing on time?
33.
Oh, then it's time to say goodbye. I got more questions. We'll do it next week. It's as simple as that. So listen, it is great to be with you. Watch PragerU videos. Give them to others, please. Do please consider, because my insights into life come from one awesome book called The Bible. I have no interest in converting you to any specific religion. I have an interest in converting you to wisdom. And my book, The Rational Bible, makes that case. It's all based on reason. I hope you will look into it. And I wish you a wonderful week. Send me questions. Send me love letters. And more than anything, send me cigars. Thanks. I'm Dennis Prager. From my home to yours, God bless you.